Good afternoon, and I'd like to start by thanking Matthew and Michelle for organizing this symposium and for the invitation to share with you our Minnesota model for the GK-12 experiences. And I'd also like to thank my co-PIs, Karen Oberhauser and Scott Lanyon and Lisa Covington Clarkson. And then you can see our other people involved in the project during the time this has been going on. Okay, so the structure of my talk today is first to share a little background with you, who we partnered with, why an elementary school focus, how we infused science in across elementary school curricula, what lessons we learned, and some thoughts on the transition. Because these grants are given for a set number of years, and the new policy is that once you've had one of these grants, you may not ever apply again. And so you are somehow supposed to come up with a transition plan to keep the sustainable lessons learned going on, which is rather a challenge. But first let me describe to you our educational microcosm. We had each year anywhere from 10 to 12 fellows. They applied to our program. They were selected competitively. They were paired with expert teachers in one of four schools. And why an elementary school focus? We had a history through the Bell Museum of Natural History of partnering with these schools. There is some literature out there in the education world that intervention at the elementary school is actually very important at science. I don't know if any of you out there have been exposed to teenagers. I'm sure you've all been teenagers at some point. And trying to explain to a middle school or high school student that science is really cool can be very, very challenging. So our goal is to try and get the students enthused about science at a young age with the hopes that once they hit puberty, they might just remember us. So that's why we're at the elementary school. Some goals for our fellows, and these come from the program itself in part. We wanted our fellows to use inquiry-based pedagogy, that is teaching activities, to become effective in teaching, helping teach teachers, and there's all this spillover. We also wanted them to understand the challenges and the rewards of being a teacher in an elementary school classroom and what their needs are, and really to practice translating their research expertise into the K-12 learning environment. And then we hoped that they would share their involvement in this program with colleagues locally and nationally. And I'm pleased to say every year that we've had this program, we've had at least two presentations at national societies, science societies, by our fellows, and in a couple of cases at educational society conferences. So we are meeting our goals, which is really fun. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the four schools we partnered with. Battle Creek Environmental Magnet Elementary School is a St. Paul school. Galtier Magnet School is also a St. Paul school. John A. Johnson Elementary. For those of you who can't see in the back, the key words of the day include larva, pupa, head, thorax, abdomen. Then we also worked with Minneapolis schools. Our long-term partner, Tuttle Pratt, unfortunately Pratt is closing this year. Tuttle was closed last year due to budgets. So we're also developing relationships with other schools in the Minneapolis school district. And we have worked with Ann Sullivan. What are some of the challenges? Well, for those of you who haven't been in the elementary school in a while, classroom time is quite limited. If you're fortunate, you have 50 to 60 minutes a week, or the other model that was in some of our St. Paul schools is there are 2 weeks of science, Monday through Friday, and then 6 weeks no science. So continuity is kind of a challenge. Schools are focused on meeting state and national standards. No Child Left Behind has had a tremendous impact on our school curricula. And we really had to work to allay fears of administrators that our program was somehow interfering with making annual yearly progress, or AYP. Now, just so you understand why our school administrators might be concerned, this is a snapshot of the St. Paul School District in 2007, based on their annual report. Only 22 of 65 schools made annual yearly progress, and as a district, the entire district failed to make AYP. 39.9% of the students are English language learners, meaning that they themselves are not proficient. And you can see we have a high level of poverty, with roughly 70% of the students having free or reduced lunch. And that 24% mobility is actually an underestimate for our schools. That means that a student comes in at the beginning of the school year and leaves before the end of the school year. So this statistic would say that a quarter of the students did not stay in the same school in throughout the school year. Our fellows were observing up to 50% turnover in their classrooms, which is a challenge. Minneapolis schools are similar. The district failed to make annual yearly progress last year. We have a high level of English language learners, poverty. Mobility statistics were not available, but again, based on our fellows' observations, it's quite similar to the St. Paul schools. So we really are serving a very needy group of children and of schools. The other challenge that we were encountering was just the perception of science by the teachers themselves. So again, we're trying to work with anywhere from kindergarten to fifth, sixth grade teachers. Here's an expert teacher who said, well, in second and third grade, this was on the evaluation before the program started, the curriculum focus is to read and write, use numbers, and learn social skills, not so much content. Science is more weighted to content. And the mantra is, you know, up till third grade, students learn to read. Fourth grade, something magic happens, and they read to learn. And so prior to fourth grade, students are not expected to read to absorb science content. But yet we can do grasshopper dissections and get a lot of great science content and process across with these students. Which brings me to the part that we had to help our teachers understand, is that science is not just content, that getting the process across is really important. And especially with the younger students, observation and communication of their observations was the way that we were able to get science into their lives and also infuse it into other parts of the curriculum. Just to give you a little bit of how we were doing it, our fellows, our scientists, and they were called scientists, spent 12 to 15 hours in the schools weekly. They spent it in the classroom, and they organized weekly science clubs. We had three fellows in each school, and the fellows would partner either to deliver as a team science lessons, or that all together they would run the science clubs. This is an example of how we use art and language arts to teach science. As we know in taxonomy, we have a great need for scientific illustration and accurate descriptions. Well, this, I believe, is Lily. Michelle's nodding, who was at this point in second grade. She was a phenomenally gifted second grader at Battle Creek Elementary. So this is the tobacco caterpillar, and in case you're having trouble reading it in the back, she's got the mouth part drawn, ecdysial line, can tell false legs from the real legs, and so on and so forth. And this would be a regular part of their science. I should say our focus was environmental sciences, not just entomology. So this young lady is learning about fish and their different parts, and they would be expected to write the terms. And what we found by them keeping these science notebooks, students practice penmanship, so teachers could count it towards the language arts time. You have to realize teachers are obligated to spend a certain amount of time on reading and writing each day. That's scripted. They cannot deviate. So if we're going to do more science, more beyond that hour, we have to find a way of incorporating it into their English, their literature lessons. The other thing about these science notebooks that it was it did for the students is it sharpened their observation skills. And you can see as you go through the notebooks during the year that their abilities to draw and to record observations just became much, much better, much more detailed, much richer. And it also increased student confidence because they'd be asked questions by their fellows and they were allowed to look back in their notebook if they needed to. And so they had this confidence that, oh, I can go look it up. I wrote that down. So there's lots of benefits to these notebooks. Now, this is an activity you can do with any age, basically, as long as they can somewhat draw. And I'm going to walk you through this. The students were given a pair of insects, and they were asked to draw and write about them. And then they had to guess what these insects were. And so this child wrote bumblebee, I'm guessing, honeybee, that's the guess over here. This is bigger, smaller. Oh, and by the way, this is not real size. This has been, scale is adjusted. It's to scale, but it's bigger than the actual size. It's enlarged. And let's see, the wings are laying to the side. Legs are very, it says fussy, but obviously fuzzy. Fuzzy body to abdomen and thorax, surprisingly long stinger. Okay, about a quarter of a centimeter. A small eye, big eye, very big. This one has no fuss. The stinger isn't visible. Way bigger wings than the other bee. Okay, so we've got the guess. We've got the description. This is the honeybee. Well, of course, all the entomologists in the audience already know the answer, but you've got to read this. Wait, this is actually a fly. That child will know a serpent till they pass from this planet. They will always know the difference between a fly and a bee. So just some snapshots of some other activities our fellows did. They were able to do, that students learned about the EPT. They didn't know that they were learning about Ephemeroptera, Plecoptera, and Trichoptera as biological indicators. But using appropriate language, they learned how to census biological diversity in the streams and ponds that ran by their school. For those schools that had monarchs in the classroom, the fellows would extend the basic lessons that the teacher was doing and add experiments in addition to the writing and drawing in the science notebooks. What were some of the lessons we learned through our participation in this program? I'm just going to check my time. Okay, I think I'm doing okay here. Well, integrating the process of science is easier and more valuable than adding more content. So if you have to, decide whether you're going to lecture those students on head, thorax, abdomen, or give them a mealworm to measure, getting them to be writing about mealworms or writing about caterpillars and making those observations and then teaching them those concepts might be the way to go. Get them involved. There was the first talk today really emphasized the need to be hands-on, and I really agree with that. We found that reading, writing, and art positively affected in the classroom. Building around themes, whether it was monarchs in the classroom, we had a gecko guy who did everything gecko for a month. But, again, we just substitute your favorite insect, food webs. Anytime you can reinforce learning through cycling back, that's important. One take home that surprised me the first year that we did this is it's almost impossible to combine math curriculum and extra science. And this seems like an incredible disconnect. Isn't math something we have to have to do science? But what it comes down to is that, again, students have to make it, they have to spend so much time on a preset curriculum in math, and they have to make progress through their math book. They really cannot take that time to do science. So we can bring math into the science part that we're delivering, but we cannot push science into the math time in the classroom. An important lesson learned is to be flexible and adapt to the local school curriculum. Our fellows each year worked with their teachers' needs for their curriculum, and so the lessons they designed were an extension and supported the teachers' needs. And that way, too, it reinforced learning, because these weren't concepts coming out of left field. They were something the students had been working with, and then they got to have fun activities with their scientists. Our students participated in science fairs. There was one in the fall and one in the spring. The one in the fall is the insect science fair that Karen Oberhauser runs through her Monarch program. These students made a Monopoly game based on insects. And some other lessons we learned, partnerships are important. When you can get parents involved, that's great. And celebrating our success with our students is really, really important. Now, this is one of my favorite projects that they did. They scaled up the dog day cicada and made a video. And I don't have time to show you the video, but it's the students did all this. They had the fellows help, but they put it all together. How do we sustain? I mean, we are at the end, we're in our transition year. We don't have $1.3 million to give out $30,000 a year fellowships and give each school, you know, $2,000 in supplies for field trips and school supplies to make these activities run. Well, all I can say is we've got lots of ideas, but no answers. This is, again, our transition year. We had enough money to do four fellows and go back to our four schools and have these school budgets. We have a volunteer graduate student undergraduate organization called Teach Smart. We're partnering with them through the Bell Museum to try and get together a sustainable model. The Bell does do school residencies where they bring school, they enhance school curriculum. We have a graduate student, very much less money, but we pay a quarter-time grad student stipend to go to the schools and help with the science content for these school residencies. We are thinking of proposing a communication course in the Environmental Science Policy Management major. Whew. And the idea here is that this undergrad communication course would train students in pedagogy and giving them all that classroom management and learning style type information you need to be able to go into the classroom. Because we're not going to be able to do that two-week training summer course with the students unless we can get like foundation grants to do it. I would do it again in a heartbeat. I think this is one of the most important things I've ever done in my life, is get one of these grants. And all I can say is a big thank you to NSF for coming up with this program. There is, for those of you who are interested in these, that's where you would look for information. And I'd like to thank you all for your attention.
Do we have time for questions?
Yes, in the blue, Martha. Okay, the question is, have we tried the lead teacher model where we train the teachers to be the trainers? And we do have teacher training workshops at the university that are done. The actual purpose of this NSF graduate program, though, is to make graduate students better communicators of science. And so for those students who, if you think about broader impacts for NSF, USDA now has a outreach requirement for their grant proposals. And I don't know where NIH is on this, but they seem to be going in that model. These kinds of trainings and opportunities give graduate students the tools they need to do successful outreach with the education community and fulfill that broader impact requirement. Yes?
I can remember as an undergraduate student, back in the 80s, taking a class called teaching science in a classroom environment. It's essentially one of these upper division undergraduate courses. You just rearchitect for it. I think people thought it was interesting. Do you think a model like that would work as a transition program for you, for graduate students and undergraduate students? take some sort of a course and get course credit?
So the question is, would having a course that would build pedagogy skills for undergraduates and graduates work? And the quick answer is yes. The hard answer is it's really darn difficult to get courses onto the college curriculum and have it be required for a major. And if you don't require it, they don't take it. But I look forward to discussing with people during the break some other ideas for transition. Thank you again for your attention.